Okay. Good evening. So just a word. Next week there is not going to be a shiur. Next Wednesday night is the Reitz dinner. It's like the professional obligation that I have once a year for my other job. So you'll have to kind of deal without me. If you guys want to get together and just schmooze, that's fine, but I won't be here. It might be picketed.
Right.
By Jimmy Carter. Now, tonight I want to begin what will be a two-part continuation of our kosher shopping list. And we're going to begin discussing the kashrus of milk. There's some extra sheets if people don't have. We'll be discussing the kashrus of milk. This is actually fairly appropriate as we get closer to Shavuos, because as we know that on Shavuos we eat milchiks, and we have to figure out about whether milk is really kosher. Can we just buy any milk in the United States? What about other countries in the world, etc.? Fortunately, Mount Sinai people travel to lots of different places, so over the past couple of years, I've had opportunities to find out information about the status of milk in various countries, and this is what we are going to be discussing. Now, one of the issues that comes up tonight, which, just to give you the punchline before we get there, is the fact that today, most of us, I think, drink regular, standard milk. That is a huge change in halacha. Right? There are mishnayos and gemaras, paskin and shulchan aruch, that you need chalav Yisrael. And milk that is not chalav Yisrael is treif. Right? The fact that we being most of us, don't drink what we call Chalav Yisrael. So Chalav Yisrael means milk that is milked with the supervision of a Jew there. The milk that you buy from, pick your company, right, there is no Jew there. There's no Jew present. I'm not talking about Golden Flow and Mahadran. I'm talking about regular American milk. There's no Jew present when it is milked. According to traditional halacha, such milk should be problematic. But we all rely on positions of Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Chazon Ish, that the average milk today is going to be kosher. We will have to, in tonight's shiur, figure out how we get there. How do we get to that point? And we will start from the Gemara and move forward. And we'll also discuss whether it's appropriate to rely on these coolers or not. Yeah. Yeah, so that's going to be the topic in 2 weeks from now. On May 8th, we'll talk about that. Why Rav Shechter assumes that all milk is really treif. We'll get there. But for tonight, we're talking about the standard issue with milk, which is the requirement of Chalav Yisrael. We'll talk about that in 2 weeks. I know it's exciting, but we got to hold it. Okay? Let's go. Zak the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. Top source. The elu dvarim shel ovdei kolcha masurin, the inisur and nisur hana'a. The following items of non-Jews are prohibited, but the prohibition is only that we don't eat it. There is no prohibition b'hana'a. In other words, I'm allowed to sell it and earn money from it. I just can't eat these following prohibitions. The first one is chalav shechelba ovid kolchavim ve'ein Yisrael ro'ehu. If milk is milked by a non-Jew and a Jew does not see it. Unlike cheese, last week, that we pointed out, according to the Shach, a Jew has to actually make the cheese. If a Jew just sees the making of the cheese, it might not be good enough. That was my focus, Ramah and Shach, that we discussed last week. By milk, it is clear that you solve all problems if you have a Jew watching. Right? If a Jew does watch, it is going to be fine. Now, what's the problem over here? Zuck the Gemara. Now, I should point out that all these prohibitions in this Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hei, are not Torah prohibitions. These are not prohibited midai raisa. This is a rabbinic prohibition. So milk of non-Jews is forbidden rabbinically. The Gemara then asks, what's the concern? If you're worried that they are going to exchange, right, the milk of a cow with the milk of a sow, like we said last week, right? Remember, davar hayotze min hatame is tame, right? If I have anything that leaves a non-kosher animal, is going to be treif. So pig milk is treif. So if the concern is that they will exchange cow milk for sow milk, that can't be, says the Gemara, because tahar is chiver, and tame is yarok. Is that true? That the milk of non-kosher animals is greenish? I don't know. I didn't look into this today, but I'm sure Rabbi Wikipedia...
Green cheese, that's where it comes from.
Maybe, I don't know. But
yarok is white.
What?
Last summer you said yarok is whitish.
So yarok is yellowish, more than greenish. That's what Tosus points out in Nida. There's a discussion. And Kaviyam Mahalalal says in Nida that dam ha-yarok is going to be tameh. But yarok, Tosus points out over there, does not mean green. Yarok means yellowish. Similarly, right, yellower, perhaps even blue is including yarok according to Chazal. Okay, but that's Tosus Nida Daf Yud Tes. Fine. So Gemara asks, what is the concern with milk if they are going to exchange the milk of a cow for the milk of a sow? So that no one would make that exchange because kosher milk is white and milk from a non-kosher animal is going to be greenish, yellowish, whatever. The imirshum iaruve, and if it is because that they might mix some non-kosher milk, milk from a treif animal, into the kosher milk, Sugma says nekum, let's make it into cheese. The amamar chalav tahar omeid, chalav tamei eino omeid. Right, we said this last week that milk of non-kosher animals eino omeid. Eino omeid means that what? It doesn't coagulate to become cheese. We pointed out that this is probably not true. Right, they can make some cheese from non-kosher animals. We don't know exactly what this statement in the Gemara refers to in reality, but it's here. So the Gemara answer, right, so we have a question. What's the concern? Whether they're going to mix a little bit of non-kosher milk or milk from a non-kosher animal into the kosher milk? If that's the concern, so all you have to do is nekum. All you have to do is make it into cheese. So Gemara answers, either kaboy le gavino hachanami, hachamayasin, either kaboy le kamko. Right? If you want to make cheese, you're right. If you're going to try to make cheese, so all we have to do is, right,
see if it
makes cheese. But this case is, the kabbalah lekamp, you need it for a type of salad dressing that doesn't solidify, it's not going to coagulate, right, or you want to drink the milk straight up. So therefore, there's a concern, right, there's a concern that what? There's a concern that maybe some little bit of non-kosher milk is going to be mixed into the kosher milk. The Gemara then asks, I take a teeny bit from the milk and try to make it into cheese. So the Gemara says, no, that doesn't help because we're worried that maybe it won't be fully mixed and therefore maybe there's going to be some nesuvi d'chalba, some parts of even regular milk from a kosher animal, don't become cheese, so it wouldn't be a conclusive proof. So basically, the Gemara is saying that the concern, the reason why the Mishnah says a Jew has to watch the milking of a cow, is because we're worried that maybe the guy is going to take a tiny bit of sow milk and mix it into the cow milk. Right? That's the concern. Now, even though they're different colors, apparently, we all did this in nursery school, no? You know that if you mix a tiny drop of one color into a very dominant other color, so it loses its identity, right? We all went to nursery school, I hope? I failed 3 times.
But that's
basically the fact, so that's the concern. The reason we need Cholav Yisrael, why a Jew has to watch the milking, is because we're worried that maybe some milk of a non-kosher animal gets mixed in. Yeah, Frida.
Is the concern because of carelessness or because of spite? Business about putting breadcrumbs in the whales before
it's probably out. More spite than carelessness.
Oh.
Right? That we're worried that the non-Jew, either spite or some effort to save money, assuming cow milk is a little more expensive than sow milk, So you want to, just like they water down gasoline in all of the... you know that if you go to one of these cheapy gas stations, you're getting probably like 70% gas and 30% water. No? Isn't this like standard practice? Right? And the car runs very differently when you go to a cheapy gas station. Am I the only one who's sensitive to this? Right? Okay.
This is New York, Mesopotamia.
Right? This is what the prophet Yeshaya was right about, Savich Mahol Bamayim. Right? That they're mixing the gasoline with water. That's exactly what Yeshaya Novi is speaking about. Fine. So the fact is, the Gemara is saying that there's a concern that maybe a tiny drop of milk of a non-kosher animal is going to be mixed in. Now, if we're really worried that milk of a non-kosher animal is going to be mixed in with our kosher milk, so why did I begin by saying it's only an Isser Derabbanan? L'chor, it should be an Isser D'oraisa. Milk of a treif animal is treif min ha-Torah. So it should be an Isser D'oraisa. How come we're assuming that's only Isser Midrabbanan? So the Shach in Yeridea, in Kuf Yud Ches, the Shach writes, Af agav, d'cholav tamo, shema yachlif, b'cholav Tomei, shehu asr mid'oraisa, commotion is bar reisim and pei aleph, even though the reason why milk is forbidden if it's milked by a non-Jew is because we're worried that maybe they'll mix in sow milk. Yeshlom ha-shecholov tomei nikar shehu achor, kedamina bavoda zara, tar chiver tomei yarok, ve'imkein ein locho sheyachlof kol ocholov orubo, ewa yeshlocho shema hechlof ma'at, te'eno asr mid'elo mid'rabonon, de'mid'oraisa min b'mino botol. Basically, what the Shach is saying is, the concern is not that a majority of the milk is going to be sow milk, because if the majority of the milk will be sow milk, then the color would be different. Rather, the concern is that minority will be sow milk. If it's only worried about a minority, so then we have the rule that min bimino is going to be bottle, right? Min ha-toira, and even midrabbanan, we paskin, that if you have two items that are similar, they're going to be bottle. Now, this is a bit of a problem, because we paskin, this machlokes Ramah and Shach in Simen Tzadiches, whether when we say that min bimino is bottle, right? Two items that are the same item, so one is going to be bottle and the other, do we follow the ta'am, or do we follow the shame? In other words, let's say you have items that taste the same, but have a different name, or they have different name, right? Whatever, you could, right, play with it. So, the Shach is saying that the milk of a sow is going to be bottle in the milk of a cow, because min bimino is bottle, right? Apparently, the Shach is assuming, and now I haven't tried this, the Shach is assuming that sow milk tastes the same as cow milk, no? Because the Shach himself holds that when I define min bimino, I follow basar taima, not basar shma. Okay, whatever it is, that's already for the Yoredeya people among us. So that is the Shach's first answer. So the reason why it's usher only midrabanan is because really it's going to be bottle. The Chazal Nish has a slightly different reason. The Chazal Nish says the reason why it's only usher midrabanan, it's not usher min haTorah, is because the likelihood of having sow milk is so insignificant. Come on. Right? Well, what are the odds? Now, you're going to milk a camel, a sow, some horse, a mare. Right? What's the likelihood of milking a mare? That doesn't happen so often in Washington Heights. So the fact is, right, since it's very unlikely, so that's why it's not considered a real concern midoraisa. But basically, the concern, the reason why the Gemara says, and this is Paskin Shulchan Aruch, that we need Cholav Yisrael, you need the Jew to see the milking, is because we're worried that some sow milk, camel milk, whatever it is, got mixed in. That's stage one. Now, what's exactly the din? What does a Jew have to see? So, Shulchan Aruch distinguishes, right, in the following case. Here, let's just read the Shulchan Aruch over here. We'll read a few lines, and then we'll comment on how this ends up applying for us. Cholav shechol ba'ovek kolchav ve'en yisrael ro'ehu, if a non-Jew milks a cow and Jew does not see it, asur! Shema irev bochalav tamei. That we know already. Maybe there's a little bit of sow milk mixed in. Now, hayecholev beveso, the Yisrael yoshev mibachutz. Let's say the goy is milking in his own home, and the Jew is sitting outside of the goy's house. Im yadua she'ein lo davar tamei be'edrel mutter. Afilu ein ha'Yisrael yachol liroso b'shar shehu cholev. It says in Shulchan Aruch like this, if the goy is milking a cow at home, and I'm sitting outside of the guy's house, but he's in his house and he's milking, it's permitted, even though I cannot see him.
How to get the cow in the house.
Huh? How you get the cow in the house? It's a tiny cow. Baby cow. Right? So you get the cow in the house, and then you are milking it. So, says Shulchan Aruch, even if I can't see the when they are milking, it still is going to be permitted, provided I know that there is no treif animal in the house. Now, how do you know that? Do you have to inspect? Do you have to inspect beforehand? So, apparently, you do have to do some sort of inspection. You know there's no treif animal at home, right? So, you're staying outside, you're not watching him milk it, it's good enough. Now, why is that true? Because in this situation, the Shach and Taz explained the only concern is that maybe the guy is going to go out and buy some mare milk, and then come back and mix it into the milk he did. So if I'm only aware the guy's going to leave the house and buy mare milk, I know he doesn't have a mare at home, right? My only concern is he's going to go out, so I don't have to watch him milk the cow. As long as I...
Maybe he has milk in his refrigerator. How do you know?
So I had to have inspected his refrigerator beforehand. I know that there's no davar tamei there, right? So once I know there's no davar tamei, I don't have to... In other words, basically, Shulchan Aruch is reinterpreting. The Mishnah says the Jew has to see him milk the cow. But Shulchan Aruch says, if you know for sure that there is no mare milk... Right? So then your only concern is maybe he's going to go out and get mare milk. So all you have to do is be outside. But if there is a mare in the house, then the Jew has to be able to see the milking. Here, let's look at the third line. Haya lo davar tamei be'edrel. V'yisrael yoshev v'chutz v'kuchan v'cholev l'tzorch yisrael. Afilo eino yachol l'rato kishu yoshev. Im yachol l'rato kishu omeid. Mutar. Sheyarei shame ya'amod v'yirehu. V'ushe yodeh shechol otame asur l'yisrael. In other words, if there is a mare in the house, so then the Jew has to see the milking. But Shulchan Aruch has a kula. You don't have to actually see the milking. All you have to do... Pardon me. All you have to do is you have to be in the place that you could stand up and see it if you'd want to. I'm sitting down. Right? I'm, like, responding to emails on my iPad. But he knows that I could stand up and see what he's doing. That's good enough. So basically, this is a great mashgiach job to have. Because you don't have to actually watch. You just have to be in a place that you could see it if you would stand up, no? Most mashgiach jobs, you have to, like, have eyes. No? You have to be watching. It's tough. You have to be awake. You know, oy vey nevach. Right? You can't be on Facebook all day. But this mashgiach job, you can be on Facebook as long as the guy is scared that you might stand up and see it. So now, let's review. Right? Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah says you have to see it. Shulchan Aruch has two kulas. You don't actually have to see it. If there's no mare at home, all you have to be is outside and you don't see anything. If there is a mare, you have to be in a place that you could potentially see it. Says the Shach and the Taz, based on this, that Yotzei v'nichnas is enough, no? Yotzei v'nichnas means I'm outside, I could come in, I have a key, I can get in. So that's good enough, because I could be there, right?
He knows you could always come in.
He knows you could always come in. That's good enough. And that will solve the problem according to Shulchan Aruch. That is good enough. So you don't have to pay a mashgiach to be there the whole time. You just have to pay a mashgiach that he should be able to come, theoretically. David.
But don't you... It's
Yotzei v'nichnas,
meaning that he comes into town every so often and
I don't predict it
will
interfere. So it has to be that he's Yotzei v'nichnas, that the Jew comes, could come in at any moment while the guy is milking the cow, the Jew could be able to see the actual milking.
Right. My point was that about the first condition, that you need to know that he doesn't have a mare in the house.
So if I know he doesn't have a mare in the house, I don't have to see anything. I don't have to even potentially see. I can just be outside and see if he would leave the house. But if there is a mare in the house, I have to be able to see the milking.
But if you're Yotzei v'nichnas, meaning you're neither outside the house nor inside the house at certain points in time.
Right.
Then how do you know that he has a mare?
How do I know he doesn't have a mare? So, I would say that I know you don't have a mare because no one in town has mares that they milk. You see, what does it mean that you don't have a treif animal? Right? many animals probably could give milk. We just don't want to think about it. No? A dog could probably give milk. No? We just don't want to think about it. It's a little bit, like, warped. But, okay. Right? And so, that's a big suffix in Poskim. Many assume it means the type of animal that usually gives milk. So, if you know for sure that they don't have an animal that usually gives milk, so you don't have to actually see the milking, or even actually potentially see the milking, just have to be there to make sure he doesn't leave the house. Based on this, the Pri Chadash comes up with the big kula. The Pri Chadash comes up with the kula, and I'll tell you the kula of the Pri Chadash. The Pri Chadash says that if you're in a town that they don't have any treif animals that give milk, so therefore, you don't even need the Jew to be outside there. You see, the whole reason why the Jew has to be outside when the guy's milking inside, when there's no mare, is because I don't trust him. Maybe he's going to leave the house and go and buy mare milk. But if in the entire town there's no mare milk for purchase, there's no camel milk for purchase, says the Pri Chadash, you don't even have to be there, and it's going to be fine. Now, that is the position of the Pri Chadash. I should tell you that in the Pisrei Tshuva, Sivkat and Gimel, the Pisrei Tshuva basically quotes that the Chassam Sofer completely argues with the Pri Chadash, and the Pri Chadash does not seem to be accepted by most poskim. Let's read the Chassam Sofer. Ayin, you see there's like a bracket on the first line on the top of Pisrei Tshuva. Ayin Tshuva Chassam Sofer, Sheherech Lohavi Rayos, Tucholov Nesar B'minyan, Kiyayin Nesach. Okay, let's unpackage this for a second. What the Pri Chadash is saying is as follows. If there is no mare that gives milk in town, or people don't milk mares and people don't milk camels, which I'm assuming is like the reality that we live with, correct? If that's the case, says the Pri Chadash, so you don't even need a Jew outside. The reason for that, pardon me, is the Pri Chadash holds that the prohibition of Cholov Akum, the prohibition of non-Jewish milk, is only when there's a concern that there might be mare milk. But if there's no concern, so then it's going to be mutter. The Chassam Sofer argues. The Chassam Sofer says that Cholov Akum is considered a Dover Shebeminyan. It is an enactment that the rabbis made. And because the rabbis made that enactment, we'll say low plug, it applies across the board, and it is forbidden, forbidden, forbidden. This, by the way, is the same conversation that we had last week about cheese. There was a dispute between the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam. No, let's say the cheese of non-Jews, you know that in your community, what they use to coagulate the cheese is asafim. They don't use rennet from stomachs of cows, right? They use grass. They use flowers. They use who knows what. Is it still forbidden? Rabbeinu Tam says it's permitted. Rambam says forbidden, right? The dispute was, is the cheese considered a davar shebeminyan? Is it a prohibition that's on the books and is forbidden, even when the reason for the prohibition doesn't apply? Because right, the prohibition of the non-kosher cheese, let's say, is because they'll use the stomach cavity of a treif animal, right? But you know they don't. So maybe it's permitted. Oh yeah, that's what Rabbeinu Tam says. But the Rambam says, forbidden. Actually, Rabbeinu Tam says slightly different, but okay. But the fact is, the Pri Chadash is saying that Cholov Akum is not a Dover Shebeminyan, but the Chassam Sofer says it is a Davar Shebeminyan. And therefore the Chassam Sofer says it's prohibited, even, right? It's prohibited. Mishumachi gam bimkomos. The Enshum Chash Cholov Tomei, even in a town where there is no concern of treif milk, kosher ein Yisrael ro'ehu is usher, udelo keradvaz upri chadash. Boom. Even if you're in a town where there's no mare and no camel that gives milk, it still is going to be forbidden because it's a davar shebeminyan. The prohibition applies across the board. Azoy zak the heilige chassam sefer. Yeah, I forgot your name. You told me last week. Again?
Malka Sima.
Hi, Malka Sima. Yes.
I just don't understand how you would ever be in a situation where you could know with 100% certainty.
Okay.
There's no mayor, there's no access to mayor mill, there's no... There's
so
no
good. Way. So, again, but we know certain countries just don't... No one in the country ever milks a... One of these non-kosher... The only thing they milk is cows. That's what you know. That's why they've been doing it. Let me give you an example. Okay, I'll give you an example. There was a young woman from this community who 2 years ago decided to go on vacation to Peru. Okay. Now, people go on vacations from our community everywhere, and they decide that, of course, Rabbi Schwartz knows whether in Peru you could just drink the milk, like, or not. Now, in fact, Rabbi Schwartz does not know this. So Rabbi Schwartz decides, I have to ask my friends in the OU, what's the status of the milk in Costa Rica and Peru and Poland, wherever people are going, right? Okay, very good. Again, because we generally rely on Rav Moshe Feinstein that regular milk, company milk, is going to be okay. But that's because of some government regulation. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But what about in Peru? Right? Is there any government regulation in Peru? You should know, just as a matter of fact, that all EU communities, all EU countries have good government regulation, including Poland. No one would have guessed that. Poland, you can drink the milk. It's fine if you hold a remisha. But many South American countries don't have government oversight. Someone went to Bolivia. Got to be careful over there. Mexico, apparently there is government oversight about the milk, but there are some very serious health concerns with the milk in Mexico. In certain parts, so don't drink milk in certain parts of Mexico. Now, what about Peru, Dashiell?
I was just
going to
say the European Union had a huge scandal this year in horse flesh that was being sold as meat.
But that's only horse flesh. But apparently the milk is fine.
I'm just saying, regulation all you want.
Again, so this is something very similar to what we spoke about with the fish, right? That when you know that there's adulteration, and when you know that people aren't playing by the rules, so what happens then? Again, it depends on how likely, but assuming that people keep by the rules, right? So the OU's official psak is that the milk in any European Union country is okay. Milk in Costa Rica... Gewaldic. Right? Milk in Costa Rica is fine. What about Peru? So the OU didn't know about Peru. There's no OU factory in Peru, apparently. Wow, who would have guessed? No OU factory that does milk in Peru. They have, of course, they have OU factories in Peru. There's no OU milk factory in Peru. So they decide to contact the local Jewish community. There's a rabbi in Lima, Peru.
Chabad,
yeah. And there's Chabad everywhere. There's Chabad in Timbuktu. There's Chabad in Peru. It's there everywhere. What?
They might add some problems recently.
Yeah. Okay. But, so they contact the local community. So the local community says that all the milk in Peru is fine. So the OU milk guy, by the way, the OU milk guy lives down the street. He lives in 182 Bennett. His name is Rabbi Gordimer. Okay, OU milk guy. So OU milk guy, Rabbi Gordimer, decides to press the issue a bit. He says, what do you mean by it's fine? So the rabbi says, the minhag in Peru is we follow the Pri Chadash. Remember, the Pri Chadash says that if you don't have any treif animals that give milk in the country, so you don't need any Jewish supervision, the minhag in Peru, apparently the only animals in Peru that are... the only animals in that area of Peru, like up in the Andes area of Peru where she was going, are llamas. That's all they have up there or something. No one milks these things. Right? So, Givaldic, the minig is you follow the Pri Chadash. Now, when we heard this, we got a little bit worried. No one follows the Pri Chadash. Right? The Pri Chadash, the Pesachim Tshuva says, the Chassam Sofer rejects it. The minhag of all poskim is not to follow the Pri Chadash, but the halacha is, if I go to a community, and the community has an established psak halacha to follow a mekel sheet that's been going on for a long time, you could rely on the standard practice in that community, no? So, you gotta figure out, in Peru, is there such a thing as a minhag in Peru? To have a minhag, it doesn't just mean that people do stuff. To be a minhag has to mean that there was some legitimate Orthodox rabbi, I'm on the record, has to be a legitimate Orthodox rabbi who who said that we will follow the Pri Chadash, and that becomes minhag Peru. Has there ever been a legitimate Orthodox rabbi in Peru? No one knows. No one knows. we just don't know. So I was very uncomfortable. So I told this young woman I really don't recommend drinking the milk in Peru because of this whole thing. And she's like, oh, whatever. It sounds like a little bit strange. I said, listen, you know, I can't say it's non-kosher because they say that the minhag is to follow the pre-chadash, but we don't know that that minhag was enacted by any legitimate source. Remember, Rabbi Natam always points out that minhag is the same letters as Gehenim. Right? It works out. So you got to be careful. Don't just say, oh, there's a minhag. You got to be careful. Fine. So that is point one in terms of the milk in Peru. In Peru, they follow the pre-chadash, apparently, or so the rabbi said. Yeah.
How do the poskim determine whether a given takhadas tachomim
is a low shabaminyan? That's a great question. Rabbi Schechter has a whole essay about this in his Sefer Be'ikvei Hatzon. It depends just on the way the Gezer was formulated. Sometimes there's some language in the Gemara that leads one way. Sometimes it doesn't. This is one of the greatest mysteries in Judaism. If I would know the answer to that, I probably wouldn't be a rich man in the classical sense, but I'd have a different type of wealth. I don't know. And obviously many issues are machlokes. Rabbi Natan and the Rambam fight about cheese. And the Pre-Chadash and the Chassam Sofer are fighting about milk. But it's a Davar Shebaminyan. But there has to be some way of... And halacha takes on its own life and has its own history. And the fact that all the posim after the Chassam Sofer, following the Chassam Sofer, no one follows the Pre-Chadash. The Stechemer and the Birkei Yosef, everyone writes at the Minhag everywhere. B'chol ha'aratzos is the local Pre-Chadash. Right? B'chol Ratzos, I guess, didn't apply to the New World. I don't know, but yeah.
Going back to the whole concept behind it of, the fear that they're going to water down the kosher milk with trade milk, if you're going to water down milk, why are you going to water it down with...
So the bigger concern is, probably because the treif milk is cheaper than the kosher milk, and they want to save some money. We don't know that for a fact, but this is what leads the Pre-Chadash to his second Chiddush. Pre-Chadash says that if the treif milk, sow milk, is more expensive than the kosher milk, so then there's absolutely no concern. What does it cost to buy a gallon of mare milk? They don't sell a fair weight or a kefud. Right? But I have no idea. But my guess is probably much more expensive than cow milk, right?
It's rare.
It's rare, so it's more expensive. So if it's more expensive, says the Pre-Chadash, then there's no concern of adulteration, and it's going to be permitted. But, right, the Chassam Sofer, who argues on the Pre-Chadash, would even forbid it in that case. So far, so good? The reasoning is because the Chassam Sofer believes that the prohibition of non-Jewish milk is a Davar Shebaminyan. The rabbis enacted it, and we're never going to have a Bezdin greater than that original Bezdin, so it applies clear across the board. End of discussion, it's all trade.
You can never change anything.
That's right.
Yeah, right. Until
Bashir. Yeah. One second. First, the Lisa and Dash.
How does it have federal regulation to still not actually supervising the Chadash?
Very good. We'll get there. Right, exactly. And that's where Moshe... that's where we're getting to here. Right? In other words, I'm setting the table here that we don't follow the Pre-Chadash, so now you should all be thinking, so how can we drink milk? Right? Good kasha. Yeah, Dashel?
If a Dava Shebaminyan, it's an Issa D'Oraisa, then.
Dava Shebaminyan doesn't mean it's an Issa D'Oraisa. Dava Shebaminyan means it's an Issa D'Rabbanon that was enacted by a great Bezdin, and there's going to be no greater Bezdin to overturn that Bezdin. Therefore, that Issa D'Rabbanon applies even when the reasoning behind it no longer applies. That's the next sentence. That's the next sentence. So far, the Chassam Sofer is assuming it's a D'Oraisa. But then the Chassam Sofer, in a true Hungarian way, decides that we're going to make everything D'Oraisa. Again, until now, the prohibition of milk has only been D'Rabbanan. Right? And that's standard Judaism. But then the Chassam Sofer has a line. I underlined it. Ba'af. Imlu yehe halacha karadvaz. Even, right, he's saying of the straw man, even if the halacha would be like the Radvaz. The Radvaz, by the way, I pointed this out one time, is the Rebbe of the Arizal, no? The Radvaz, when he was around 80, decided that he's going to leave Egypt and move to Israel to die. That's what lots of rabbis like to do. You go to Israel to die. His bad luck, he chose a town in Israel called Tzfat. And all these young whippersnappers are moving into Tzfat. And this 80-year-old guy who just wants to have a nice vacation and, die in peace, now it's all these young 30-year-old, Kabbalists hanging around him, including a young Yitzchak Luria, who the only reason we know that he knew anything in normal Judaism is because he is a student of the Radvaz. And the Radvaz knew normal Judaism, and his student is the Arizal. He probably also learned normal Judaism. I'm very serious. I know, like, Lag BaOmer is coming up, and I probably shouldn't rank on Kabbalah, but whatever. Okay, but the fact is, Zaklech Sam Sofer, Va'af im lu yehe halacha karadvaz, even if we would follow the Radvaz, that when there is no concern of a sow, it is going to be kosher. Kivar kiblu avoseinu aleihem ka'osa deya de machmir, va'osir abnei ashkenaz midina, ve'ein lo hatora, ve'karov ve'einai leneder de oraisa. Even if we would hold like the Radvaz, and we'd hold that technically, halachically, when there is no trafe animals that give milk in the town, it's all going to be kosher. But the Jewish people have accepted, or Jewish people from Ashkenaz, have accepted on themselves not to drink this type of milk. Consequently, it becomes like a neder. The Gemara Nedarim Daf Tesvav, Das Pei Aleph, says that a minhag is binding as a vow, as a neder, and therefore, you cannot be matir it, because this isn't an individual neder. This is a communal neder. You can't go to three rabbis and say, mutzalach, 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 hataras nedarim, kol nidre don't help. Right? The fact is, right, it's almost an issu d'oraisa, korov be'enai le neder d'oraisa, says the Chassam Sofer, basically, okay, if you hold like the Radvaz, you're in bigger trouble.
But who is
because
the
then it becomes a Torah prohibition to drink the milk. Ad kan divrei chesam sofer, and many, many, many accept the chesam sofer lahalacha. Eliza then Trina, yeah. Yes, so this might so this might fit into the Chassam Sofer's general approach that if something that Jews have always been doing is d'oraisa, right? Chick chak, right? That's the way it is. Okay. Chassam Sofer, again. Chassam Sofers are taken very seriously.
You say it's like making a netter, but here I ask, who made this netter on behalf of who?
Okay, so
who
apparently...
Did they take a poll?
So apparently there is a certain type of netter that if an entire community does something, even though usually a netter has to be uttered by me, I have to say it.
Yeah.
But if an entire community does something, that type of minhag is binding as a neder. The Gemara derives this from Al Tishtosh Torasi Mecha, from a pasuk in Mishlei. The explanation of this is probably something about communal practices are different than individual practices. And that's all the Chassam Sofer is saying, that B'nai Ashkenaz, the entire community, remember, like, waiting 6 hours between meat and milk is a minhag, right? But it's a very serious matter because, right, it almost becomes like a nether for us since we've been doing it for many, many, many generations.
But at the time, say two-thirds of the community decided to do this and the other third didn't. A third, it's not a majority, but it's also a significant number of people.
Again, he's assuming that everyone accepted against the Radvaz. Mm-hmm. That is what the Chassam Sofer says. Okay, so far so good. Yeah.
It's understood as a siyag. It's not a midah chassidus or something like
that. It's almost, he doesn't say real d'oraisa, it's almost. Korov be'enai, that's a d'oraisa. Right? Not just midah chassidus. So that's the Chassam Sofer. Now, the Chazon Ish, in one of his essays, I give it to you at the very end, the Chazon Ish basically quotes the Pri Chadash. It sounds like he's endorsing the Pri Chadash. The Chazon Ish is makel on what we would call Cholof HaKompanies, based on the Pri Chadash. We don't hold like the Pri Chadash. Well, who's we, tea biscuit? The Chazon Ish held like the Pri Chadash. Right, so the Chazon Ish could drink the milk in Peru. Now, the Sefer Chelkas Binyamin, that is Reb Flavel Cohen's son. He wrote a halacha work on all of these dinim of Bishul Akum, Pas Akum, chalav, etc., what we're discussing now. So he points out that nowhere in the Chazon Ish does the Chazon Ish deal with the second argument of the Chsam Sofer, that maybe it should be binding as a neder. In other words, the Chazon Ish basically says, we don't tell like the Pri Chadash. But the Chsam Sofer says, even if you don't tell like the Pri Chadash, it still is forbidden based on the neder. And nowhere in the Chazon Ish's essay does he deal with that argument. So, comes along Rabbi Binyamin Cohen in the Chelkas Binyamin, and he says, even though the Chazon Ish writes in his Sefer that he's Mekel on the milk of the companies, but really he's not Mekel. Because really it's going to be also based on a neder, because of the second reason of the Chsam Sofer, which the Chazon Ish never dealt with, and therefore it's also based on neder, and there are some traditions out there, the Chalkas Yaakov has tshuvas, etc., that maybe the Chazon Ish really held that the milk of companies is going to be usher.
But if that were an issue with Chazon Ish, why would he bring down his agreement with the...
So it's very difficult. So I think it's much more likely that the Chazon Ish doesn't quote this issue of neder, because he felt that if people do something by mistake, that's not a neder. Let me explain. It only becomes a neder if I know it's permitted and I still decide not to do it. But if I think it's really forbidden and I don't do it, that's not a neder. That is a mistake. That's a stamaki. Right? So the fact is, I think the Chazon Ish is not contending with the neder issue, because he's assuming that people didn't know. Who's enough of a lamdan to know that the Pri Chodesh says it's mutter, but even so we don't do it? No! People felt it was usser, and they were mistaken, Zakh the Chazon Ish. Because he brings rayas, he passes like the Pri Chodesh. If that's the case, that's why he doesn't contend with the neder issue. Now, let's go to Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein, in a few different shuvas, written all to this Rabbi Yehuda Dick. These are Simin Mem Zayin, Mem Ches, and Mem Tes in Igris Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein permits what he calls Cholav HaKompanies. Vidvar Cholav Shal HaKompanies. You see how you spell companies? Okay? So when it comes to the Cholav of the milk of the companies, so Rav Moshe writes, since there is Pikuach HaMemshala, since there is government oversight, and if they would mix Cholav Tomei in Yei Anshu, they'd be punished. Vigam Yasgiru at HaEsek Shalahem, they would close down the business, so therefore they are scared. So therefore, says Rav Moshe, Yesh Tam Gadol LaHatir Af Belo Shitas HaPri Chodosh. Moshe says, even if you don't tell like the Pri Chodosh, it's Mutter. Mishum Ta'ikar D'Yediyah Barura Hikari'iyah Mamish. Like a case in Shavuos Daf Lamed Daled. The case in Shavuos is that you see two guys walk into a empty stone room, right? And one guy comes out with a bloody knife, and the other guy is in the room dead. What do you think happened, dudes? Right? So the Gemara says that there are concepts of Anan Sahadis. Anan Sahadis that we didn't see it. No one saw him kill. But we're pretty convinced that he killed him. Right? The Gemara has Anan Sahadis in cases of Arayos, no? The Gemara asks a question. Again, it's a little bit of a graphic question, but in the case that, like, there's a case of Znus that's going on, how do you know they actually did anything? Right? So the Gemara says, B'mina'afim, Mishigiru k'mina'afim. If you see people and they're undressed and they're acting in the way that people usually act, you assume that that's what's going on. You don't have to see, the Gemara says, k'michol b'shfuferes. You don't have to see, like a cotton swab going into a tube. That's the lashon of the Gemara. So the idea is that we have an Anan Sahadi. We know! And Ananan Sahadi, says Rav Moshe, is like Re'iya Mamish. It's like actually seeing. So here also, Rav Moshe says, we know there is government oversight. We know that there are no sows that are being milked. Therefore, it is going to be fine. It's like we saw it. Right? So he's skirting the Pri Chodesh based on this idea of Anan Sahadi. Now, Rav Moshe's Anan Sahadi is because they'd be punished. They would have serious fines, and not only would they have serious fines, Rav Moshe says, they would also close the business. So we know for sure that there is no sow that is being milked, end of Rav Moshe's discussion. Now, comes along Rabbi Yehuda Dickinson and Memphis. He says, whoa, Rav Moshe, serious fines? I investigated, he said. What do you think you get fined for if you have a sow on your farm? What's the fine?
If you have a sow.
$25.
What do you mean if you have a sow on your farm? Lots of
I have a cow farm.
Oh.
And there's a pig there. Sorry. And they catch me with the pig, milking the pig. What's the fine?
For actually milking the pig.
$25.
It's worth it.
So, it's worth it. So, with this doesn't deter Rav Moshe. Moshe says, even if the fine, the next truth for Moshe writes, even the fine isn't so big. It's actually, I'm overstating the case. The fine varies between $25 and $100.
So this is 1954. It's a different.
This is, the first truth is in 1950, let's say, the first truth is in 1954, from Chesvav Siv on 1954. The second truth is Rosh Chodesh of Menachem of 1954, 2 weeks later. Right? And in the 2 weeks, basically Rabbi Dick investigated, and he found out that it's $25 to $100.
So
this doesn't stop Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says that's okay, even if the fine is very low, but if they catch you doing it 3 times, they'll revoke your license. So you're not going to try it. Okay? Okay, not bad. Not bad, says Rav Moshe says, okay, they'll revoke your license, and that's why you're scared. But then Rabbi Dick doesn't give up. Rabbi Dick says, whoa, hold it, Rav Moshe. The government regulation is only on the dairy plants, where they package milk, etc. But the way milk works is you have cows on the farm, they milk the cow on the farm. There are no government regulators, says Rabbi Dick, in Elul of 1954, a month later. Right? There is no government regulators on the farm, and therefore Rabbi Dick is worried that the milk was treif the moment it's milked on the farm because there's no government regulation over there, even though there's government regulation where they package the stuff, but once the milk was treif already, it can't become kosher because of the government regulation, the packaging. Okay, it's a good argument, no? So Dr. Moshe, no, you're wrong. And this is why Rav Moshe permits it. Rav Moshe says he thinks that the prohibition of non-Jewish milk doesn't set in so long as it is owned by a guy. Meaning to say, the only time the prohibition sets in is when it goes, you found something good?
Oh, the inflation calculator.
What?
$25 would be $216.33.
Good. So that's not even
a parking ticket. That's good. You're like $216.
Inflation calculator, right?
But Rabbi, half the sidewalk vendors in New York City are illegal, and they consider it a cost of doing business. Every so often,
that's right.
To be dragged into court and pay $100 fine.
Yes. But apparently, they are not worried that they're going to lose their license and be closed down completely because they'll just go elsewhere.
Yeah.
But if I have a dairy packaging plant, and I invested millions of dollars in machinery, and I have lots of workers working for me, and they revoke my license, I'm of gehakta tzaris. That's Rav Moshe's basic idea. But Rabbi Dick then argued, he said, 1 second, but there's no regulation on the farms, so it should all be treif because the milk became treif the second it's milked. So Rav Moshe responds, he thinks that we don't look at what happens in the farms. You see, the farms, Rav Moshe says, are non-Jewish. The only time we have to begin dealing with the halachic shaila is when the milk ends up by Jews. And that's after it is packaged. So therefore, I don't care about the fact that it was milked without any regulation, right, on the farm, because at that point it's a goyish shaila, and the goyish shaila doesn't bother me. Now that would mean, by the way, that according to Rav Moshe, right, if a Jew owns the milk farm, so it's really going to be treif. Rav Moshe's only mako because of the idea that he calls Bali Yad Yisrael, that the only time the shaila has to be asked is when it comes into the Jewish hand. This is what he says in the tshuva.
What?
So if it's a non-Jewish manufacturer, so then we.
Such things don't exist.
So if the non-Jewish packaging of the milk So at that moment, still, we don't ask the Shaila, but the government is already supervising. By the time a Jew gets it, there was already supervision on it. There's already government regulation, which equals supervision by the time the Jew got it. No, sure there is, because if there wouldn't be government regulation, so then by the time I buy the milk in the store, I say, right now it's a treif, because it's never been regulated. I don't know for sure there was no sow milk in there. But if I know for sure, but if before the Jew bought it, you knew for sure, right, we don't say it became treif. Once something is treif, it can't become kosher. So I don't say it became treif in the farm, because the farm is still a goyish question. The only time I deal with it becoming treif is when a Jew buys it. And by the time that you buy it, there's already regulation. 1 second, Elisa. So therefore, right, Rav Moshe says it's going to be, Rav Moshe says it's going to be kosher based on the regulation. That's Rav Moshe's argument.
But I don't know. There's no regulation.
Then on the farms.
On the farms.
Then they can do anything.
Change it.
There's no regulation on the farm. So when it was milked on the farm, I have to be, in theory, I should be worried, maybe there's sow milk. But when they package the milk in the plant, so then the government regulates to make sure it's not sow milk at that point.
How can the government know?
Because they do a test of the proteins in the milk.
Oh, all right.
And they find out that this is cow milk, not sow milk.
Okay.
Right? That's Rav Moshe. That's Rav Moshe's tshuva.
Oh, all right.
They test the milk.
Very eager to make it permissible.
Yeah.
For sociological reasons.
Because everyone's doing it.
Or well, in those days, you couldn't really get it.
It was
1954. There was Balsam's milk, I think, was the first Kol of Yisrael milk.
Who?
Balsam's milk in, like,
Pitkin
the 1940s.
Pitkin Avenue.
Whatever it is, okay?
That's an Orly,
yeah.
This might be a question in the second part of the year, but what about pasteurization, where it's flash-cooked?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that next week. Maybe there should be a Bishul Akum problem because the milk is cooked.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that next week.
So there's milk in the store which has an OU on it. What does that mean?
Milk with an OU just means that the OU is endorsing the government. The OU is saying that it's a legitimate government.
there's no gain having an OU on it, basically.
No.
You don't need an
none
OU.
None whatsoever.
I called up OU. They said you don't need any.
You don't need any OU, any Hechsher milk.
In Canada, there was
the
milk.
Canada, the milk is not. Right? Canada has the same government policies as the United States. Milk does not need supervision.
But there's no. There's, at least there never was any hashgacha.
Right. You know, the reason why the OU puts hashgacha on milk is the same reason the OU puts hashgacha on Tide detergent, because it's a moneymaker.
Bottled water.
Bottled water, yeah, probably also.
I kind of like
but
tithing stuff.
You have to make sure it's not New York City tap water.
Bottled water.
Right? Now, so this is Rav Moshe's argument that there's no supervision on the farms, but it doesn't become treif when it's on the farm. The only time it could become treif is when the Jew buys it. By that point already, there has been government oversight, and therefore it's going to be kosher. Yeah, Elisa.
How do you not know in the United States whether or not a farm is owned by a Jew?
No way of knowing. Rav Moshe says that Mistama, probably most people in the United States are goyim, probably it's, if you would know that it's owned by a Jew, the milk would be treif. That's what Rav Moshe assumes. Now, 2008, the OU decides to look at the milk issue again. And lo and behold, they find out, and Rabbi Avram Gordimer wrote this up in the OU Daf HaKashrus of December 2008. Cholov Stam Revisited. This is the article. So he says they found out that they no longer do any protein tests on the milk in the packaging plants. They don't. You know what they check for? They check for contamination. To preclude contamination from rodents and pesticides. That's all they test for. There's no, like, rodents that are mixed into your milk and no pesticides mixed in, but they don't actually do the protein tests. Apparently at one time they did, but they don't do it anymore. USD regulations, they don't do it. Okay, so milk should be treif, right? No. Because now, today, the government, everything has switched from the time of Rav Moshe, from 1954. Mm-hmm. Today, the government actually inspects the farms. 2 to 6 times a year, they inspect the farms. I mean, he gives you the whole thing about the amount of pathogens that are acceptable. That's all the government is checking for in the processing. But in the farm, the dairy farm inspection report, they make sure that there's no swine or fowl. That's on the report.
Fowl?
Fowl, chickens. Chicken, you don't want chickens around your cows. I don't know why exactly, but it's bad for everybody. Right? In other words, and there's no trash, unnecessary article, no other no animals besides cows, no swine, no fowl.
Goats that are allowed?
They can't...
are goats allowed? Again, it says no animals, swine, or fowl. Right? There are different things. So basically, the amazing... Right? Again, what happens if there's a dog?
Cows and swine and fowl.
It's two different things. There's a cow yard investigation and a cleanliness investigation. I'm just putting them together. Yeah, if you want, you can look at this. Right, two separate things. So the fact is, it's on the other side, right? That, and it's the two circle parts. The fact is that the halacha of permitting milk today, and Rav Moshe permits the milk, but Rav Moshe's permission on milk is the opposite of what we have. Rav Moshe permitted milk based on the packaging. We permit the milk based on the government inspection of the farms. Rav Moshe said there's no government inspection of the farms, but apparently there really is, and that's why milk is going to be permitted, according to Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe's permission is based on this idea of Anan Sahadi, that it's like we see it. Because the government is regulating, it's like we see it. Many poskim don't hold of that. That's a big chiddush, right? Because most poskim reject the pre-chadash. If you reject the pre-chadash, you have to say a fancy Torah as to why the milk is permitted. That's like I'm seeing it. That's why the Malamed Lahoel I give you on the source sheets, etc. Rabbi Reb David Zvi Hoffman, by the way, he was the father-in-law of Alexander Marx. Reb David Zvi Hoffman permits. See, happens says the milk is forbidden, etc. Many poskim say it's forbidden because they don't hold to this chiddush of Anan Sahadi that Rav Moshe has. But basically, Rav Moshe's permission is based on Anan Sahadi. We could say something akin to Rav Moshe, not exactly the same. We could say that it's permitted because there is an Anan Sahadi based on what goes on the dairy farms. The minhag of people, I think, in our communities is that they drink non-Chol of Yisrael milk. I always thought it was very funny when the Lubavitchers were attacking David Berger for writing his book against the Rebbe. So the main thing that they attacked him is, how does anyone who drinks non-Chol of Yisrael milk have ne'emonos? Oh, that was one of their arguments. I thought that was very funny, yeah.
It would be funny.
So now that the dairy farms are being watched, then we don't have to worry about whether or not it's coming from a Jewish...
Correct. So now it's a better... So even if the farm is Jewish-owned, right, it's a bigger kula than Rav Moshe had, absolutely. Rav Moshe would not be mako on a Jewish-owned dairy farm, but we can be, based on the way Rabbi Gordimer says the government inspection actually worked. To the best of my knowledge, that article from 2008 is the most up-to-date thing we have. Okay, thank you for coming. Now, next week again, we're off. 2 weeks from now, we'll talk about why Rav Schechter doesn't drink milk and the related issues.